Welcome to the Dildork, Storky Discourse on Sex, Dating, and Masturbating. My name is Kate Sloan. I'm a sex journalist, a sex blogger, and I just got back from Portland, so I'm exhausted. That has nothing to do with what we're talking about today. I just wanted to mention that because there's some weird jet lag energy happening over here. Who are you, friend?
I'm Bex. I am a sex educator and a sex blogger, and I am also con dropping wool hard. I just got back from Sex Down South and drove basically 2 days to get home. It was so much time in the car. I'm so tired.
Yeah. Weirdly, we were both in Atlanta for like an hour at 6 a.m. on Monday morning, but I was stuck in the airport.
And I was in South Carolina, actually,
by that point. Well, never mind. Yeah. I thought we were close together, but...
That's closer than we usually... Is that closer than we usually are? I don't know.
I have no idea, honestly, but...
We're usually, like, a 9-hour drive apart, so...
Yeah. I am happy to be back in my room and in my home city. But, so we were gonna maybe do a wrap-up of our two events, but I feel like we both didn't have a ton to say about them, and the one that I was at was not even sex-related, so... Instead, we're going to talk about sex games. Ooh. I can't believe, actually, that we haven't talked about this in depth before, because I used to date a game developer. Like, my two longest relationships have been with a game developer and an app developer. So I'm, like, well acquainted with the concept of the sex game. But do you want to try to explain, like, what the purpose of a sex game is and, like, kind of what it is?
Well, so when you brought up the topic of sex games to me, I had two different things come to mind. The first of which is something I saw after, you know, years of working in sex toy retail are these, like, board games that are either, like, based very loosely on other board games that you may be used to or completely made up, to be, like, sexy and risque and adult only and that sort of thing. And they're designed, I think, to make straight people comfortable with sex and comfortable talking about it. 'Cause I've seen them... and to kind of be an icebreaker, right? Talking about sex and... engaging with it as more than just something you kind of fall into and do together in, like, the heat of the moment and then never speak about ever again, is, I think that's the way a lot of folks approach sex, and I think these games are designed to kind of make it a little more playful.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think it is largely about starting conversations, especially for... vanilla people or straight people or people who, for whatever reason, are not used to having in-depth conversations about sex. But that said, I do think that there are, like, some benefits even for people who do talk about sex on the regular, especially because, like, you might want to try new things, but unless they're, like, very high on your list of priorities, like, you might not get around to trying new things all that often. So, like, novelty games or, like, games that are supposed to force you, not force you, but, you know, encourage you to try new things is one of the major categories of sex games.
Yeah, I think my biggest issue with them is they are rarely as kinky as I am.
Yeah, this is the problem.
Yeah, and also a lot of these mass market ones are not made for people with, like, niche sexual interests or are rarely made for queer folks or, you know, in general. I love more the gamification of sex that you're already having, right? Like, how do we take this conversation and make it playful? I do a lot of negotiation games. Where it's like finding playful ways to learn more about the people I play with and that sort of thing. And that's more just in line with my own experience of sexuality and just works better for me. But I know a lot of folks find a lot of value in those games as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think, like, one of the reasons that they are so popular and that people do tend to enjoy them is that they give you, like, a reasonable excuse, quote-unquote, to talk about or do things that you're interested in doing. Because, like, same as with playing Truth or Dare when you're in the eighth grade, it's like, well, it's not me who wants to, like, make out with you in the closet. It's like, the game is telling me to do it. So, like, you feel a little bit, like, absolved of, like, the unchillness of wanting those things. Which is why these games, like, largely don't, like, hold as much appeal for people who already are comfortable asking for what they want. But, like, that's, you know, we sometimes forget that's not the majority of people. Like, most people are, like, pretty uncomfortable talking about sex. So I think they're, in a way, good. I was reading this article on Vice where they had interviewed the sex therapist Dulcinea Pitagora, who literally every time I mention her on this show, I'm like, we got to have her on the show because she's so great. But so she was talking about good and bad types of sex games. And one of the things she was talking about was how some of these games are set up as competitions. And, like, I remember when I was listening to the Sex is Fun podcast when I was, like, 12, like, they were advertising their company, which was greatsexgames.com. And a lot of those games were based around the idea of, like, playful competition, often, like, between couples who were, like, facing off to see who would do more stuff or more extreme stuff or whatever. And Dulcinea was pointing out in this article that competition-based sex games, like, they will work for a certain type of person, maybe, but, like, for the most part, they're not the healthiest or best type of sex game because, like, you can get kind of roped into doing something that you don't really want to do. And also, sometimes you get into this weird place where sex becomes a punishment for certain things that may go wrong in the game, or sex may become, you may become so focused on the competitive aspect that you might not even be, like, enjoying what you're doing. And so I agree with her there. I think the more fun types of games are ones that are, like, more collaborative.
Yeah, and I think it makes sense that a lot of games would kind of default to that, like, competitive framework. Because I don't think most of these sex games are made by game devs or are made by folks involved in creating experiences like that. I think they're made by sex toy companies and people who have are familiar with the idea of games, but, like, there are tons of tabletop and role-playing games that are based on collaborative models. And even, like, introducing stuff like that to folks when I play with, they don't necessarily realize that games can be collaborative, that it can be two people versus the board, or whatever that kind of looks like. And I'd love to see a lot more games playing with that style of gameplay.
Yeah. I think one thing that the game dev industry and the sex toy industry have in common is that there's a high tendency of people from outside the industry to be like, well, that looks easy. I can just join that industry, just, like, make my own thing. And they don't have any of the, like, knowledge and history and context to back that all up. And so exactly what you're saying, like, you have people coming in who have no game dev experience and are just trying to build a thing that they think would be sexy and fun. And they're like, well, I know what's sexy and fun for me, so, like, I can build that. But there's so much theory behind game development, like, theory about, like, what is fun? How do you trigger the feeling of fun in the brain? And, like, what gets boring? Like, what level of competitiveness feels good for folks? Like, there's so much underlying theory there, and this is kind of why I think that until we get good sex games on the market, which I have yet to see any that I really like, I think the most fun ones are the ones that you essentially make up yourself, which we're gonna definitely talk about.
Or taking existing games and just making them sexy, because there are a lot of great games out in the world. And I'm not talking, like, I mean, strip Monopoly, live your life. I don't know. If you want to dedicate the next 6 hours to taking your clothes off, do that. Fucking Monopoly. But more things like, you know, Truth or Dare, or, like, you know, taking a bunch of popsicle sticks, writing a truth on one side, a dare on the other, throwing them in a little, like, mug and playing together. And now it's all stuff that is custom to you and your relationship. And it's still like, oh, maybe you each, like, separately made 20 little sticks each and put them in together and, yeah. you know, pull them out randomly. Or, you know, maybe you build this thing and, like, every Friday night you pull a new challenge out of the challenge box and you try it mm-hmm. together. Or, you know, whatever that looks like. Because I feel like these games put a lot of emphasis on, like, creating a board and an elaborate game system or whatever, when
yeah.
games are just an organized type of play, and there are so yes. many ways you can do that. Because sex is play, and that's my whole TED Talk we'll get to one day.
Yeah. I think if you're trying to build a sex game, it's useful to look at the game. Is it called 1,000 blank cards or something like that? Uh-huh. Where essentially, like, it's just a game where you have a bunch of blank cards and each person, like, writes, like, a rule or, like, something you have to do as part of the game on the card. Mm. And so you're literally building your own game with the group that you're with, which ends up being...
It reminds me of Flux.
I do not know that one. But it's, I think that it's a much better model for games in areas like sex that are so personal, mm-hmm. Because you're basing the development of the game literally on, like, the group or pairing that you're in, and so it's going to be, like, more tailored. But I did want to, you mentioned Strip Monopoly. I do want to talk about Strip Scrabble for a little bit of a second. Just because I think that it's interesting to discuss, like, how you can make these, like, more traditional games into a sexy game. And I wanted to give some ideas that are, like, related to Scrabble. And maybe folks can, like, apply these to other games if you want to. If you don't like Scrabble for some reason. I fucking love Scrabble. So people were asking me on Twitter, how do you play Strip Scrabble? And, I mean, again, like, you gotta make your own rules, I think, is the most fun way to do it. Like, there are people online who think they know the correct way to do it, but whatever. I have played it a bunch of different ways. One way that's, like, really dynamic and is gonna have a lot of movement and stripping is, just, like, whoever gets the lower score each turn takes off a piece of clothing. You could do it where the whoever gets the higher score puts on a piece of clothing. I've seen people say that if you get a score higher than 25 points on a word, then the other person has to take some clothes off. Maybe you want to adjust that point threshold depending on your skill level. I've heard, like, if you get a triple word score, somebody has to take their clothes off. All these kinds of things. And my personal favorite, actually, sexy Scrabble variant, which is really more like first date appropriate or second date maybe, is just, like, every time you play a sex word, sex related word, you get an extra 10 points or however much you want to give. And the reason this is such a good date game, early date game, is that you get to find out what the other person thinks sex words are, and you get to have, like, flirty, you know, discussions about, like, what counts as a sex word. Because if they're putting a verb in there, like, my favorite example is plead. Like, a date played that on a game that I played, and I was like, well, okay, you're kinky. so that's fun. Do you have any favorite, like, sexy adaptations of more traditional games? Like, you're a video game person too, so I'm sure that there are, like, strip related rules you could apply to certain video games.
Oh, absolutely. I think I just usually like, because I can be a little bit competitive, I usually like just setting the stakes as something sexy for, like, a round of Mario Kart or something like that. But then it has to be something that, like, you know, I might play that with someone that I'm switchy with, and the winner chooses who tops or something like that.
Yeah.
And it has to be, but when you're doing that, you have to be careful, right? Because you have to be, varying degrees of competitiveness. I have a history of struggling with being a sore loser. and you have to, like, the prizes have to be things you're both excited about, right?
Yes.
You can't go into that and be like, well, I better win so I can top, because God, I fucking hate bottoming. Like, that's not a fun game. Like, but if you go in there being, and the whole time you're going around the tracks, you're like, wait until I make you suck my cock later. Oh, you're going to have to do so much. You know what I mean? Like, that shit can be fun, you know? Just wait until you see what I have in mind for you. Oh, I'm going to make you do this or whatever. Distracting people with sexy things on their turn while, you know.
The distraction as, like, thing sabotage. Is great. Yeah.
Shit like that. To just kind of infuse the sexiness, like, over it. Mm-hmm. Most of the stuff I gamify, though, is, I mentioned this earlier, but negotiation games. I love just even super simple, like, the question game, where it's like we take mm-hmm. turns asking questions. I've played stuff where I said, I had someone, we were crafting, we were planning on doing a role play scene, and we were crafting characters for it. And I'll probably talk about this a little bit more, because I get super nerdy with role play. And I set up a game, because I wanted to learn about this character that I was going to be playing with, right? So I set up a game where that person could give me as much or as many or as few facts about their character as they wanted to, and they could be as detailed or as basic as they wanted. But for every fact they gave me, they got one about my character. They got to learn a mm-hmm. little bit more. Mm-hmm. And so it incentivized them to be creative, to come up with weird, cool stuff, because I told them the more creative they're... If they tell me their character's favorite color, that's all they're getting. But if they give me something really unique and interesting and elaborate, I'm going to put more time in to come up with something more interesting on my end as well. Mm-hmm. So setting up, like, reward and incentive and time limits around this conversation that you kind of need to have anyway, mm-hmm. Is a fun way to keep it be really engaging. And I also like doing this if, like, it's a long distance thing, or if I'm planning a scene in advance, or, like, we've got a little while until we can play, so how do we make this part fun in the meantime?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I think it's interesting you bring up reward and incentive, because I think that those tend to work better for sex games than punishment, unless mm-hmm. very specifically punishment in some sense is your kink, in which case there's a lot you can do. But I think punishment is rough for most people in my experience. Yeah. It's hard. It can create, like, weird dynamics, especially if, as you mentioned, somebody is a sore loser. Like, you don't want the sex game to make your sex life less fun. Like, that's not the point, right?
Right.
So, like, if you're playing a game and you find that you are actually hating it, like, that's not good. And that brings me to the consent piece, which I think is, like, really important here. And, like, Dulcinea was talking about it in the article about how competition games can, like, sort of cajole you into doing things you are not that stoked about. And I remember having this conversation a lot when our mutual friend was working on a board game that was sort of like an adaptation of Truth or Dare. Mm-hmm. And part of his project was, like, he was making the point that a lot of people want to play Truth or Dare but are bad at coming up with ideas for the truths and dares, which is, like, super true in a lot of groups that I've played it in. And mm-hmm. so he was coming up with ideas to put in there. But he was faced with the question of, like, how to deal with consent within this, like, board game system, because in a, like, really standard vanilla game of Truth or Dare, like, you can tap out of a truth or a dare, but, like, it's really frowned upon, and, like, depending on
that's
the group,
kind
you
of
might
losing
not... yeah, like, you might not feel able to do it, really, and, like, that's obviously not cool in a sex framework, but at the same time, like, it isn't really a fun game if anytime anything is, like, at all uncomfortable, somebody can be like, nope, I'm out, give me the next one, because you can just go through, you know, a lot of them and only do easy ones. And so, like, I don't know, like, where do you think the middle ground is there in terms of, like, how can the game still be fun and exciting without being non-consent-y?
So I've seen a couple of, like, caveats and things. I've seen ones that cards have, you know, multiple choice on them of varying yeah. degrees, right? Easy, mm-hmm. medium, hard. Or, you know, kinky, vanilla, or however you want to delineate it. I don't know if I love mm-hmm. easy, medium, hard, because there is a bit of a value judgment there. But,
yeah.
you know, pick one of these three things and do them. Mm-hmm. I have seen, especially with Spin the Bottle and Truth or Dare, a system of, like, you read out the thing and anyone who's willing to do it with you volunteers, and then you pick someone.
Yeah. The other thing for Spin the Bottle specifically is, because it indicates a particular person, you can go and have a little negotiation with that person, or, like, maybe they are down to make out, or maybe they just want a hug or a high five or whatever. And I yeah. think that that's nice. And also, like, I've seen it done with sex educator groups, and it's really fun as sort of like a really brief crash course in, like, the various different ways that people like to negotiate. It's like a yeah. really cute, like, kink nerdy thing to do.
That is cute. I did, last time I played it in a sex educator group, if it landed on you and you were not down, you could say pass, and it was really cute, because then you would see a bunch of people clamor to get picked. So you had this moment of like, all right, this person's not down right now, but look at all of these people and look at exactly how excited they are.
Yes.
And he kind of got you that enthusiastic consent, because they would like dive over each other and be like, no, hello, hi. I was real cute. I'm trying to think what else I've seen. Yeah, because I think it's just finding fun ways to engage on your terms. And building in that out and making it an ongoing part of the conversation.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not like you're the only person that's going to back out of a dare in this entire game, right?
Yeah.
Or have, you know, a list of fallback things that are always posted. That like, oh, if you don't do this, you can do one of these, you know, four goofy, benign dares. And you can always yes. pick one of those four. Or do whatever you pull out of the pot, or whatever that looks mm-hmm. like.
Yeah, I think that that is good. It's a really difficult thing. I wanted to talk about sex dice. This is like one of the weirdly most ubiquitous sex items in my experience. Like, they're it's really everywhere. Weird. You'll find them in like bachelorette party kits and like subscription boxes and like just like all over the place. People are really into these dice. And like the thing is, I don't know if people are actually using these dice. Like, I just know that tons of people are making them. But so usually the conceit of the dice is usually there's two, and one of them is verbs and one of them is body parts. This is the version that I've usually seen. Mm-hmm. So you roll and maybe you get the verb like lick, and then maybe the body part you get is like elbow or whatever. And so then you do the thing and you just like alternate back and forth. And when I was dating a game dev, he made like an electronic version of this. And the reason that that was cool was that we got to together sit down and write those lists together. So it wasn't just like using pre-made dice, because, you know, different people have different bodies and different needs. And also, like, maybe the verbs on the dice aren't doing it for you. Like, if I saw the word slurp on there, I would be pretty turned off. And then maybe it's stuff like, I don't want anybody to do anything to my knee because I have chronic pain there or whatever. Like, so you can, like, customize the list to your own specifications. And it's really silly. It's a really, really silly game. But, like, part of what makes it fun is that you will have, like, really sexy, sensual things that you very much enjoy interspersed with things like lick somebody's elbow or, like, you know, tease somebody's whatever. Like, I don't know. It just, like, leads to these odd combinations that are icebreakers in and of themselves. Because, and also, like, especially in a long-term dynamic, like, you might not be exploring your partner's body head to toe the way that you may have earlier on, mm-hmm. or may have wanted to earlier on. And so these games offer an opportunity to, like, maybe find out new shit about, like, what your partner, like, what feels good to them and what feels good to you, even.
Yeah. Speaking of dice, kinksters are fucking nerds. And I have seen so many kinky impact games with d20s.
Dungeons, you know, and Dildos, D&D.
Roll a d8 for, you know, what implement, and roll a d20 for how many hits, or, yes. you know, roll a d10 for an intensity, and then, and you can play with what the ranges of those look like. Roll for impact.
This is one of the things I love, where, like, kinksters can make really innocuous objects into filthy sex toys. Like, you can just be out anywhere and have dice. Nobody's going to look at you weird if you have dice in your pocket. It's really cool.
Yeah.
Can we also talk about Truth or Dare for a second?
I fucking love Truth or Dare. So
I really, really love it. So our mutual friend who was trying to make a board game of it, I don't know what the status is on that project, but he told me at one point that he thinks he almost kind of has a truth or dare kink. Like, there's something about that specific situation of, like, being put into these slightly uncomfortable things that you have to do that, like, turns him on. And I totally get that. Like, I think that there is something there about, like, being controlled, even though it's the game that's, like, doming me, that I enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, there's an exhibitionistic quality to it, right?
Yes.
You're doing all of these things in front of people. There's usually some degree of humiliation or shame or nervousness or whatever, not to a super intense degree, but just a little bit.
Yeah.
And for me, it very much ties into, like, my age play stuff around teenage
Yes, role plays. Exactly.
Because it's all of that heightened tension, right? Every fucking teenage soap opera we watch, Riverdale, whatever bullshit, some drama happens during Truth or Dare.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, it's the big moment, or 7 minutes in heaven, or whatever the fuck it is, you know?
Yeah. That's where my positive associations come for it personally, like, even outside of media stuff. Like, so much in high school, I was playing a game of Truth or Dare, and that's where some social situation got pushed forward. Like, I had a crush on someone, and I finally got to kiss them. And then, like, we have to have a conversation about, like, what happens now. So, like, it really does help advance things when you are perhaps a very shy high schooler.
Yep, and every other high schooler in the room fucking sees it happening and is like, just do it! God!
Yeah.
Because teenagers are like this.
Yes.
Yeah, it creates a social context for taking risks.
Yeah.
In a way that not a lot of other things do.
Yes. I think, so often games of Truth or Dare break out sort of like impromptu, which is fun. But if you are trying to like specifically prepare a game of Truth or Dare and you want it to be good, I would say it is a good idea to prep a bunch of Truths or Dares in advance. And the way I like to do it is you have those available, like maybe written out on slips of paper in a jar on the table. But people don't have to use them. Like, it's just there if people don't have ideas, because people too often do not have ideas. And there are tons and tons of websites online where you can find good truths and good dares, and so you can prepare those. And I would definitely say have a mix of dares that relate to connecting to another person, like make out with this person, or and that are just yourself. So, like, one that I always remember that was a really silly dare that I enjoyed was, like, take the worst selfie you can possibly take and then post it to your social media somewhere. And, like,
that.
The rule was, like, you could delete it after 2 minutes if you want to, but it was just, like, the act of doing it. So yeah. I think, like, it's good to have a mix of things that are, like, just you and things that, like, connect you to another person.
I like the idea of creating, of, like, color coding those and throwing them in a big jar. For so that, like, you can choose, maybe, like, I color code everything, but, you know, maybe the green ones are truths, maybe the blue are solo dares, and the purple are group dares or couple dares or whatever, and that way you can kind of decide in that moment for that round how ready you are to engage with another person or not.
Yeah. I would also add, if you want to create a positive environment in a game of Truth or Dare, you must never shame anybody for anything. And it's, like, sad that I even have to say this, but, like, too often people are shamed when they pick truths all the time, or too often, or when they, like, do a dare in kind of a cop-out way. And I think, like, if we're trying to be sex positive and we're trying to encourage, like, a sexually exploratory and safe environment, we need to not shame people for stuff like that unless we know for a fact that that person is into that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think explicitly saying all of those things before you start the game is also helpful.
Yeah, like, code of conduct for your Truth or Dare game.
Exactly.
I would also add, I mean, maybe this goes without saying, but I do want to call out, since, like, these games, like sex games, especially group ones, often might happen at parties. Be mindful of the ways that intoxicants might, you know, intersect with these games. Like, there, some of these games are, like, have some element of intoxication, like take a shot every time, whatever. Or that might be your dare, or, you know, whatever the situation is. And really think about that, because it might seem innocuous, but if you're doing sex things, you have to apply the same rules that you would apply to combining sex with intoxicants, which is, like, probably you want to negotiate it, and probably you don't want to do stuff with people you don't know very well, and, like, you know, be more wary. And then also, like, if people want to opt out of that entirely, that is fair.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any other sex games that you want to discuss before we...
I mean, it's not technically a sex game, but mm-hmm. It feels like we need to mention your Who Would You Rather Fuck game.
Oh my god. So this is one of my favorites. This is not a...
It's my favorite icebreaker party game.
Yes. This is not a doing stuff sex game. This is more of like a mental cerebral sex game, but it does get you discussing sex, which is fun and sometimes a good, like, you know, opening act to later sexy stuff. So my pal Leon taught me this. So what you do is every person in the group is given some slips of paper, and they can write down on each slip of paper like a person, a concept, an object, any number of things, like, you know, maybe you have three slips of paper and you write, like, Michelle Obama, a live tiger, and the feeling of reading on an autumn afternoon. So you throw all of those, everybody's in the same hat, and one person starts the game and draws two. And you look at the two things and you decide, like, which of these things would I rather have sex with? And it can be, like, kind of literal, like, what would it literally feel like to have sex with this thing? Or it can be more just, like, emotionally based, whatever. Like, the person making the decision gets to make that decision based on whatever's important to them. So then whatever the winning thing is, they put it back in the pot, and then the losing thing gets discarded. And then you go around the circle, and everybody does this, until you get down to one final item that wins. And it's so fun because you get to really learn stuff about the sexual preferences of yes. the people you're playing with.
And what I love is that all of them kind of spawn these interesting conversations of what would it be like to have sex with that thing?
Yeah.
Because often, like, sometimes they're people, but more often they're strange things that you're not actually sure what sex with that would look like. Does it have genitals? How would I?
Right.
Does it go in? Do I go in it? Does it? I'm not like unclear. Some of my favorite winners. My favorite winner is probably the second kinkiest wizard. The world's second kinkiest wizard.
That was very funny. Yes. I liked a giant parrot that's really good at dirty talking.
Yes. Yeah, I was gonna say there was a parrot something or other one.
I played another game where the winner was a big house in a good neighborhood. Like, yes, totally.
Oh, what one when we were at Woodhull that year? Do you remember?
Oh, God, I don't remember.
Someone who is very, very good at that thing that they do made its way around for a long time. I don't remember if that was
someone
won.
Very competent. Yeah, something like that.
Someone who's very, very good at that thing that they do, which, like, yes.
Yes. Like,
we were all just, like, competency fetish.
Okay, a couple more things, and then I want to get to listener questions. Yes. You mentioned when we were prepping for this that you wanted to talk about gamifying sex and kink, and you've been talking a little bit about negotiation, but I was wondering if you wanted to go into that a little bit more.
Yeah, I just feel like kink gives a really interesting opportunity for this, even in the way I was talking about with the dice or whatever. Because, I mean, I guess there is a huge variety of sexy things that you can do, too. But kink, for me, is a lot more tangible, and it's a lot more closely linked to play for me. Like, sex is play, too, mm-hmm. but kink very much is so.
Yeah.
And I think just... I think it just creates a lot of really interesting opportunities to think critically about how we can make the things that we're doing more creative and fun. And, you know, part of that is randomizing things and, like, mm-hmm. leaving a little bit up to chance or, you know, exaggerating something that you're already doing by making the stakes just a little bit higher and a little bit kinkier. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I think that really creates, I don't know, I want to invite people to think more creatively because I have a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah, I was thinking about this today in relation to protocol because, like, if you're in a 24/7 or long-term DS dynamic, sometimes it can get to a point where your protocol is all, like, fairly practical stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe you lose sight a little bit of, like, the sexy side of it. I think Sinclair Sexsmith was talking about this on Instagram today, and they have some tips about this on their blog and in their DS playground thing that they do. But one of the things that I always remember is they made like a jar, if I'm remembering correctly, which I fully might not be, with their sub, where they wrote like a bunch of different potential protocols that they were interested in trying. And then like every week they would like draw a new one and try it out for the week, which I think is really, really fun. Especially if you're like not totally sure what you're looking for out of a protocol. And it also could be fun to do that with like sex things that you either want to try and haven't, or that you have done but you don't do them as often as you would perhaps like to. Like for me, there's like a bunch of peripheral things that I don't do very often but that I enjoy, like boot blacking and temperature play and hypno bondage. Like, you know, there's enough that I could probably come up with like 50 of these things, and then you could just draw one out of a jar whenever you feel like it, and that's like a little bit of like gamification.
I will just give a shout out, if we're talking about gamifying protocol, for all you role-playing nerds out there, there is a to-do app called Habitica that allows you to basically gamify your to-do list. I've been using it a lot, but it would also be really great for gamifying protocols for a 24/7 submissive, because you can create like guilds and classes so that like a leather family could all be playing together at the same time, working towards something. I know, I saw it and like saw it into my leather family future and had a million feelings. But you can set up things that have to happen every day, things that are like one-offs that go into a to-do list. And you are able to, it's super customizable. You can customize how difficult things you expect to be for people, and they get higher rewards if they're more challenging. You get higher rewards for having a streak, and doing it like every day or every week or however often you need to. And it can do things like earn in-game currency, and then you can create rewards that you can buy with that currency. So for my own to-do list, I have rewards like going to see tickets to see shows that I enjoy or whatever. But for a submissive, I might have them be able to buy a spanking or, you know, buy a certain kind of other scene that they're really excited about or something, that they've earned by creating all this stuff. And it's very overwhelming and complex. But if you are a person that plays a lot of like Elder Scrolls, Far Cry type, like Final Fantasy type role-playing games, it is a system that you're very familiar with, and it's been around for years, but they recently made it really pretty, which is really aesthetically pleasing for me. But you can even add like widgets on your phone. Like I have a button on my home screen now that gives me points every time I learn something new, because it's something I've wanted to be more conscious of in my life, actively seeking out new information. But it gives you that, something that game theory really relies on is that, like, tangible feedback, right? It gives me fake money that did not exist in the real world, but I get to push the button and it feels good every time I do it. And that's something to keep in mind with this kind of, like, protocol game theory type stuff, is sometimes it's just, like, the tangible feeling of getting to say you did the thing, like that feeling when you cross something off on a to-do list or whatever. So how can you play into that theory, into that like feeling as well?
Yeah. That reminds me of this tweet that went viral, or Instagram post or something recently, that was like a star chart, like star sticker chart thing.
And it was for the, that's what I was going to say.
It was for the dad of a family, ostensibly, but it was stuff like when he cleans up the children's vomit, he, like, earns stars toward a BJ eventually and stuff like this. And people were making fun of it, rightfully so, because it is, like, some toxic heteropatriarchal shit to think that a dude, like, doesn't have to do housework and should be rewarded for helping with the parenting or whatever. But when I saw it, I did think, like, this is something that perverts could make into something cool for themselves.
Yes, that's exactly that's what I was thinking. Because, like, think about how we reward kids to get them to do things they want, because those things continue to feel good into adulthood. Like, getting a that little moment of a sticker or something, we step away from it because it's considered juvenile, but it still gives us that, like, endorphin boost and that little moment of feel good, and it's still rewarding, and we don't have to, like, obviously that stuff's great for age players, but it works for folks of all ages, so we can look at, like, the games we play as kids and be like, how do I make this filthy?
One of my warnings on this, though, would be that whatever you set up as the reward that somebody is earning, it shouldn't be a thing that you would like to do frequently anyway.
Yes.
Like, I would never put BJ as a reward on that kind of star chart because, like, I want to give BJs more often than that. And also, like, this is a weird game theory thing, too, like Skinner box shit. But, like, if you start to get rewarded or compensated for a particular thing that you already enjoy, sometimes it can make you enjoy it less or expect that reward every time you do it. And that's just, like, kind of not good for how you want your brain to behave during sex and kink. So I would say, like, make the rewards a particularly special thing that perhaps the submissive has been wanting for a while, rather than, like, habitual sexy things that you want to do together most of the time.
Yeah, because there is a degree of conditioning that comes with these styles of, like, ongoing games. Like, that's what I was talking about with that, like, I have a button that I push every time I learn something. It's not, I don't know that I'm learning more things than I was before I did it, but I'm conditioning my brain to notice that and actively seek it out more. And that's something deliberately I'm doing, but I'm fucking with my brain chemistry and, like, creating connections. And it's harmless. I want to continue to learn things. That is a good thing. But we can accidentally do that in harmful ways about other things. So I think that is a really good thing to kind of acknowledge.
Yep. Some listener questions. Folks had some interesting questions about this. One person was asking, how can you make a game still be fun and equitable if one person is better at it than the other? Like, for example, if I was playing anyone in Strip Scrabble, I would probably win. But so how do you like level the playing field if people are at like different levels of skill on a particular game? And I would say, like, first of all, you don't actually have to play whatever that game is. Like, you can probably find a different game where like everybody's more equal. But also, like, I think it could actually be fun to play with that, like, power dynamic in a weird way. I'm not exactly sure how this would manifest, but, like, I could see it being a fun, maybe, like, psychological humiliation scene a little bit if well, actually, like, someone did best me at Scrabble once on a date, and I was like, whoa, like, we should fuck. Like, it was very powerful.
I would say, like, I mean, it fully depends on the game, but okay, how do you make the game harder for that person? If they're very good at this, that means they've been playing it in a very specific way for a very long time, so how do you change that? So maybe, I don't know, what is Scrabble, 7 tiles? Maybe you play with 6, and I get 8.
Or maybe one person has their hands cuffed behind their back or is wearing a blindfold. I mean, not for Scrabble. That wouldn't work.
Or maybe either of those you have a 1-minute time limit looking at your things and you have to make a move within that minute. And I get as much time as I need to play with my stuff. Or, you know, if we're playing Mario Kart, maybe you have to play as Bowser instead of Toad. Which will fully change your experience, by the way. I fucking hate the heavy characters.
Maybe the person who's better has to provide a sexual service or be provided a sexual service during their turn so that they will be a little distracted.
Yeah. Maybe they need to win by a certain margin or win twice before they get something where you only have to win once. You know, win within a certain time limit. Because maybe that's something I've been talking about with, like, physical stuff, with, like, wrestling stuff. I rarely win, but I can hold out for a while. So maybe for me, winning is if I go 5 minutes without tapping out, I've won, even if I can't, like, get you to tap.
Yeah.
So either redefining winning or giving them some other set of rules, right? Equal but not equitable or...
You
know what I'm trying to say.
Equality without symmetry, which is something that kinksters are already very good at. Yeah, exactly. I think that those are good tips. A listener was wondering, what is a good game to get group sex rolling? I think Truth or Dare is sometimes fun if you're with a group where, like, they're gonna get comfortable doing progressively more extreme, more sexual dares. But also, like, with Truth or Dare, you very much run the risk of staying very, like, surface level, mildly flirty. Like, it really depends on the group and the dynamic.
Yeah, I really liked honestly, the, like, if we're talking about, like, you're hosting a party and you're looking for the icebreaker, the, like, what would you rather have sex with game, something like that can be really fun to, like, get the topic onto sex and get you talking about it.
You could also do adaptations of that game where perhaps you, maybe you do it with all kink activities and you throw them all in the hat and you have people like pick. I mean, as long as you can trust them not to be shamey and to make it a personal choice rather than like a moral choice. But that will definitely get you talking more specifically about things that you could specifically do with these people.
Yeah. Naked Twister.
Yes. Okay. That's an interesting one because that breaks the touch barrier, which, like, I hear mostly pickup artists talking about the touch barrier and breaking it and, like, Kino and stuff.
Yeah.
But I actually do think if you get people touching in a consensual environment, that will lead them closer to sex than just talking.
Or even, like, lingerie twister. Because, like, naked twister is, like, maybe a jump for your group. But if you're, like, you know, put on your, like, sexiest Halloween costume or whatever and play twister or something... Anything that I think encourages you to be, like, touching and, like, somewhat cuddly. But, like, all of my group stuff has started by getting really comfortable touching the people, all of the people in the group, in, like, casual, comfortable ways. So a lot of times for me, that's, like, cuddling while watching a movie together or, you know, something along the, or, you know, just having conversations or whatever. But I think if you're trying to, like, actively move from, you know, we had this dinner party, whatever, and now we're trying to move to the, like, group sex part of the evening. Anything that encourages contact and touch is really helpful.
This is an interesting one. I don't know if, like, we really have the expertise for this, but someone was wondering, like, is it possible, really, to make a commercially viable, mass-produced sex game, or is sex too personal and varied? And I do want to say, first of all, I think both of us have been approached on multiple occasions to, like, provide feedback on a new sex game, and, like, you should pay people for that if that is a service you are seeking. Like, that is consulting, and, like, I would be happy to do that as a consulting job, but asking someone to play a game that's, like, not tested and not workshopped, and, like, I have to, like, put together a group to do that, like, you know, that's a big ask, actually, and people are always just like, just try it, just have fun, let me know what you think, and it's like, it's actually really not that easy.
Yeah, and you can't just let them know what you think. You need to, like, throw together thoughtful feedback for it to be actually useful.
And I need to be paid in order to have the time and resources to do that.
Exactly. I would say I think it's doable. I think it needs to be highly customizable by the players.
Yes.
However, like, I'm not going to come up with an answer in 30 seconds on this show of what that looks like, but I think we've been throwing around a lot of ideas. Mm-hmm. And I think it would need to be highly flexible and dynamic. And also create space for players to add their own ideas, or some sort of system where, you know, it comes with 1,000 cards and you sort through the stuff that you're excited about including. Or, you know,
like,
some
stack your own deck. Yeah,
exactly. Like, some degree of customization. I think it would be, you would be able to create something fairly marketable, and it would need, you know, add-on packs, booster packs of cards, or whatever that manifests as, so that, like, you could buy, like, the DS pack, or you could buy the bondage pack that has, like, really drilled down specific stuff about bondage and et cetera.
I think one of the reasons that Truth or Dare is such a classic and is so much beloved is the open-endedness of it. Like, even the truth questions themselves are often fairly open-ended, so they don't, like, prescribe a particular type of answer necessarily. And that's a game where, like, people can really come up with their own shit and customize it for the group, and I think that that's really the important thing.
Yeah.
Because, like, if you suggest in your game a particular sexual activity, like, there's going to be people for whom it's too extreme, and there's going to be people for whom it's, like child's play. So it's really not, you can't find, like, an objective thing that's going to work for every person. Like, that's kind of just, like, how sex works.
Yeah.
One last question. Do you have thoughts or feelings about sex and dating simulator types of games? Do you enjoy them? Do you think that they help anybody learn these skills? I don't know.
I have never played one that felt helpful. I am in love with everyone in Dream Daddy. All of the daddies. but... Yeah, honestly, for the most part, I don't have a ton of experience with them, but for the most part, my experience of them has been, like, goofy, campy fun, which is a genre of media that I do enjoy sometimes, but I've rarely seen ones that are, like, particularly educational. They tend to be more in line with, like, soap opera and fan fiction representations of romance than, like...
Yes.
Actual, like, more real life typical expressions of romance, although I do love me some campy gay bullshit.
I mean, yes, there is a sex education online based game called OMG Yes. Oh, I actually don't know if I don't think that they would necessarily consider themselves to be a game, but I do think that they do kind of gamify the process of, like, listening to someone talking about their sexual preferences and then trying to do the thing to them that they asked you to do, which is a really useful skill, especially since we live in a world that, like, so wants to boil down sexual skills to, like, a learnable process when it is, like, so much more fluid and individual than that. So I do think OMG Yes can be helpful for people who are, like, lacking some confidence in their sexual skills or just want to, like, you know, see what's out there in terms of different people's tastes and preferences. So that's a good one. There's, like, a lot of debate about, like, even for me personally, about whether, like, dating simulators or, like, even, like, dating through RPGs is, like, helpful, especially to folks who, like, struggle with their social skills. I think it's, like, sort of a two-sided blade, whatever that expression is. Two-edged sword. What is the expression?
Double-edged sword.
Double-edged sword. Because like, it can build up your confidence if you have some sense of, like, having had experience with dating, even in this sort of, like, smaller form. But also it can, like, teach you that real people are going to respond the way a character in your dating sim does. And, like, real people are much more dynamic than that, obviously. And also don't owe you sex or dating. So, I don't know. I think you can take it with a grain of salt. Like, they're fun, but I don't think that you can really, like, learn that much stuff from them, ultimately.
I think you learn a lot more about the game dev's thoughts on dating than you do about dating in the world. Like, whenever I'm playing them, my thought process is never, how would a man like this respond? It's, what does the game think it wants me to say? You know, like... Yeah. I'm very rarely, like, acting based on what I know of the real world, and much more often acting based on what the universe of the game has told me.
Okay. That's it for us. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Dildorks. Thank you for joining us. My name is Kate Sloan. You can find my sex blog at girlyjuice.net and the rest of my writing at katewritesaboutsex.com. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at girly_juice, and you can listen to my other podcast, the game show podcast of shockingly personal questions. It's called Question Box. You can look it up wherever you get your podcasts.
Speaking of gamifying vulnerability.
Yeah, truly. Like, that's maybe why it's been on my mind.
Yeah.
Is because, like, the game show aspect of Question Box is really this, like, very, very loose wireframe around the whole thing. And, like, really what it is we want to talk to people about vulnerable, interesting, personal shit. And we set it up with this frame that brings that out through, like, a little bit of competitiveness.
Yeah.
But I think it's really fun, and it really demonstrates how, like, sometimes games can really unlock something in people that allows them to share more or be more open or try things.
Yeah, I mean, I think when you create, we're getting off topic again really quick, but I think when you create a frame and say when you're standing inside this fence, you're going to be vulnerable, and the more vulnerable you are, the more rewarded you are going to be. You get a lot of really interesting stuff out of people, and that's a lot of how, that's a lot about why I've tried, why I try to gamify negotiation is very similarly, right?
Yeah.
And that
said, that would be, it would be consent problematic if we just threw people into that vulnerable frame without, like, prepping them. But we do tell people when we invite them on the show, like, pretty much exactly what they're going to get into. And there are, there's a back catalog, so if they really wanted to go listen, they could. So, like, that's important to us because we don't want to just, like, spring people with these, like, questions that they didn't know they were going to have to answer.
Yeah, absolutely. And, like, when I gamify negotiation, I generally do, like, a check-in app after to be like, so all of this is still, like, you're still feeling in line with all of this, right? You know, and take it out of that framework because games can make things complicated.
Yeah.
But we also, vulnerability is not something that is often incentivized in our world. So sometimes creating a little bit of an extra structure to do that can give people space to open up where they may not have felt comfortable before.
Yes.
Also, I'm Bex.
Well said.
You can find all my writing at BexTalkSex.com, and I'm on Twitter and Instagram at BexTalkSex. Together with the Dildorks, we're on Twitter and Instagram at The Dildorks, and you can find us at TheDildorks.com. You could also find us by searching The Dildorks in your favorite podcast app. While you're there, rate and review us. It brings us up in the charts. And if you listen to us on Spotify, or if you listen to other things on Spotify, you may not know that we're there now. Head over there and follow us. Like us. I don't know what you do on there, but do the thing that makes us popular. If you want to continue to support us, you can also go to patreon.com/thedildorks to throw a couple of bucks our way, help us keep doing what we're doing, and help me afford to get top surgery in like 5 weeks.
Yay! Thank you so much to Protodome, who did our theme song. Thank you to Amy, who did our logo. And thank you to you for listening. Until next time, folks, get out there and live your sexy, dorky life.
Bye. I had something and then I lost it because you started talking about hypno bondage and I started thinking about that. Hang on. It's fine. I made it, like, the beginning of the sentence, I went, oh, I have a thought, and then the end of the sentence was hypnobondage, and I went off on a totally different tangent.
Can I, just random hypnotangent while we're on it? I did transmat this past weekend to feel as if me slapping their cock was pleasurable.
Amazing.
Yeah, because we've been, like, doing a little bit of light CBT on occasion, so, that was really fun. I got to slap a cock around a bunch. Cool.
That's delightful.
Yes.